This episode of Gareth Jones on Speed features 93% more Zog at no cost to the user. Yes, you heard that right. That wasn't Gareth Jones on Speed. It was Zog on Speed, and for good reason. Hey, Z, how you doing, man?
Hey, not bad, not bad. How you doing? How are you today?
I'm very good. I'm very good. I feel like I'm on holiday today because my strategy for this episode of Gareth Jones on Speed, as you can tell from the piece of gaffer tape labeled over, it says Gareth Jones on the logo. It now says Zog. That this is your edition of the show, Zog. Let me explain why. When we did 20 years on Speed in July, you drove up to Wales and back in a wonderful Porsche Macan EV, and you recorded a lovely little report, just like one of the reports I do when I'm out in the car. So that's going to be a big part of this show. And anything else that goes in the show, Zog, up to you, blood. I'm with you. I'll talk whatever you want to talk about. What you got?
Well, obviously, the first thing on the agenda is surely Monza. Last Grand Prix and the McLaren team orders. To remind anybody whose memory is particularly short, while Max did a tremendous job in running away with the race, took a terrific win. Well, say running away with it, you know, it wasn't his easiest win. And the McLarens came in second and third. But there was an interesting incident towards the end of the race where both of the McLarens had stayed out on their hard tyres, long past the point where everybody else had made their compulsory pit stop. At least. And when they made their pit stops, they bucked the usual trend of the lead driver, who at this point was Lando Norris, who was ahead of Piastri. They didn't pit the lead driver first, which you tend to do because you give whoever's in front an advantage, and pitting first tends to give you an advantage. They pitted Piastri first, then they pitted Norris, but during Norris's stop, they had a problem with one of the wheel guns. It was a very slow stop as a result, and the positions of the McLarens were swapped on track as a result. And we should say that at this point they were 1-2 on track because Verstappen had made his pit stop. And the McLarens were first and second on track, although in true racing terms, they were second and third because once they'd made their stops, they were going to come up behind Max. That was clear. But whilst they were still second and third behind Max, their positions were now reversed, and they gave a team order for Oscar Piastri to move over for Lando to restore the places before the pit stops.
And he didn't sound happy doing so.
He didn't sound happy. I mean, you know, he didn't. You know, I mean, Oscar Piastri is an admirably, you know, level-headed, calm, very, very measured in his responses. Yeah. He's not a hot-headed guy at all. But you could tell from his radio during the race that he wasn't happy about it. He seemed to have, you know, calmed down a bit after the race and accepted that it was the right thing to have done. But it's an interesting one because, for me, I think McLaren were quite justified in asking him to do that. You know, assuming that what they said to both drivers before the race, you know, presumably over many meetings and discussions about how you go racing, assuming it's in line with those discussions, which I think it was, I think it's perfectly okay to issue that order. And to me, it seemed like it's the flip side of McLaren being very good and much better than most teams at letting their drivers race, even though when it might risk the best possible result for McLaren, they are much more likely than other teams, they are much more inclined than other teams to let their drivers go at it. And I think this is kind of the flip side of it. The social contract here is, yes, we're going to let you guys race as much as we can, and, you know, we're going to maybe have to do a couple of things to enable that to be fair. And what they were doing here, their intention before the pit stop was that the positions wouldn't be reversed, that they would, you know, maintain their relative track positions. Because of a problem in the pit stop, Lando was disadvantaged. And he'd questioned on the radio whether he was going to be disadvantaged when they told him they were pitting Oscar first. So I think from a team strategy point of view and kind of driver management, it's okay. And I think from the driver's point of view, you know, this is a team sport. Both of those drivers are being paid a lot of money by McLaren to be their two drivers. And I don't think it's too much to ask Oscar Piastri to move over, as Lando did in Hungary last year.
Three things. Yeah. I'm stacking up.
What do you think? Yes, I've given you my tuppence worth.
Mean, I completely agree with you up to a point, and I'll explain. Yeah, team sport, agree with that. Absolutely, it's a team sport. You'll hear it across many, many teams. We will do whatever is best for the team, and that is your first priority. And if you go against that, you know, you risk losing your drive. That's across any team. I accept that. The second one is, yes, of course, McLaren were able to use their positional advantage to reduce a disadvantage. You know, teams will do anything that they can to gain an advantage. And if that helped out the team, they did that. And third of all, yes, but no. Of all the teams, McLaren have been the best at allowing their drivers to race until now. And I think we've actually got to that crossover point now where they're starting to think about how they want to secure a driver's championship this year. It always happens. Teammates always get on great until they're the two vying for the championship. Then it gets messy.
Now, explain to me then how what happened at Monza backs up your argument that McLaren are now perhaps compromising their individual drivers to get the best team result. How does what happened in Monza back up your case?
I don't know, but philosophically,
I think it doesn't. I think it undermines your argument.
McLaren are the de facto winners of the Constructors' Championship, really. Now, no, it's all,
yeah, no one's going to catch them. Absolutely not.
Can it be done? Otherwise, they would have been declared
I'm
as
not
winners,
sure.
Right?
I think if they spent the rest of the season on a beach, you know, maybe they could be beaten. But it would have to be something like that. You know.
They probably have information that we don't have about why they wanted those drivers in that particular order. You know, we've had Mercedes engine failure at that race, didn't we? Or was it the weekend previous? Why were McLaren unable to keep up with Red Bull this time round? Very unusual. Have they had to turn down the Mercedes engines because of the cycle, the position in the cycle of how many engines they've got over the season are? You know, there may be information that we're unaware of here. And they were concerned about perhaps the chance of one of those cars in the top three not making it to the line. And, you know, they want to maximise points for both cars.
Okay, but if that's the case, and they're actually getting concerned about the drivers' championship, why would you give a team order that reduces the points that Piastri is going to get out of the race?
Piastri's leading, isn't he, by how many points?
We don't know.
A small number of points, right? I don't know is the answer. I take your point. How can this help them? There must be some way that this helps them that we're unaware of. That's what I'm thinking.
I don't see it. I think, no, absolutely not. I'm not buying your argument here. No, I think, if there is a point in the season at which they're going to get tougher on their drivers about racing each other, we're not there yet. And and given how dominant they are in the constructors and in the Drivers' Championship, I don't think that's going to happen. You know, unless they have a couple of disastrous races, I don't think that's going to happen this year.
They have to factor in that possibility.
You mentioned the Red Bull being quicker this weekend. Maybe McLaren have dialed things back a bit. Yeah, maybe they're being a little bit more conservative somehow and they're trying to make up a bit of ground. I think this was Red Bull and Max Verstappen finding more speed at this last race. And I say that because the McLarens were, they were comfortably managing everybody else. And even though Ferrari had, you know, they'd shown a bit of that home crowd and Tifosi boost effect that you might have expected before race day. And when it came to Sunday, McLaren were comfortably ahead. They weren't really worried about Leclerc catching them at the end. They were only focused, I think, on the fight with Max Verstappen. So I think this was a case of a slightly refreshed Red Bull under new leadership, finding a bit more. I don't know quite where they found it, but they found a bit more speed this weekend. And, you know, if you can give Max Verstappen the tools, he can deliver something special. And he was just, you know, magnificent at Monza. So, no, I think it was Red Bull and Max doing a super job rather than McLaren having an issue.
Laurent Mekies, am I saying his name right? Seems to have settled in very quickly in the northernmost part of the Toro Rosso. I mean that, Toro Rosso factory. I mean that. That's not a mistake. I mean that. Yeah, he seems to be, everyone seems to be very happy. Even the southern part of the Red Bull Empire. Poor old Isaac Hadjar. You know, flashes of brilliance, lots of unluck. And he finished 10th in the end. And there's much talk of him joining Mekies in the Red Bull A team, and I'd back that. I'm a big fan of Isaac Hadjar, but I'm concerned that he is yet another driver who will get eaten alive by Max Verstappen.
Well, I hope they don't shift him over to Red Bull too soon, because yeah, I think it's looking overwhelmingly likely that he's going to be the next driver to get, you know, beaten up by Max Verstappen. I think one thing we can learn from the last few years is that Red Bull are probably a little bit too quick to throw out the other teammate without always giving them the best chance to settle into what is a very, very difficult job. You've got, you know, what must be surely the toughest teammate in the pit lane to compete against, who's been at Red Bull for long enough that, you know, even if he's not overly Machiavellian and inclined to undermine his teammate, and let's assume that he's not, I don't think he's really that kind of person, he knows how to get the best out of the team. And of course, he's the driver that is most likely to deliver the team maximum points. So as a teammate, that's a massively difficult job to do well in. And it's not made any easier by the fact that the spotlight is on you all the time. So I hope they don't move him over too quickly, because he's been a fabulous rookie this year. He's been absolutely outstanding, you know, one of the best drivers we've seen, you know, for a few years. He clearly deserves a step up to a better team. But if it happens too soon, it could really trip him up. You know,
two things about Isaac Hadjar. Number one, he reminds me of every lad who was in fifth form at Stoke Newington School with my two sons, Tycho and Indy. He just looks just like a 15-year-old to me, and he looks just like them. And that he wears his heart on his sleeve. You know, he really, really emotes in great sadness and great positivism, and I welcome that in the pit lane, because at one end you've got that, and at the other end you've got Oscar Piastri. I'm really angry now. Oscar Piastri. Yeah, I'm really elated now.
Yep.
Yeah, it's been a great weekend. You know, and both are valid, you know. Yep. You cast Formula One, don't you? You know, you need the goodie and the baddie and the emotional guy, and it's how you make TV programmes interesting and movies interesting. And we have a range of characters in Formula One at the moment. Some are very lovely corporate lads like George Russell. Oh, he's a good lad, isn't he? Oh, you'd take it home to meet your mother, wouldn't you, George Russell? He's nice. And then there's Max Verstappen, who you might ask, well, how did you meet up with him? What's okay? And then there's, oh, I like that. He's like a jar when you bring him round. He's lovely, you know we need this range. Then you've got the unlucky guys who still keep trucking, you know, talking about Hulk. But we need Isaac Hadjar in F1 as much as we need a McLaren title fight, Lewis in a good car, and Max still being the one to beat.
Yep, no, I agree. You need a range of personalities there. And Isaac is great personality as well as a great driver. So, let's hope we see a lot more of him. It is Saturday morning, quite a wet Saturday morning here in West London. You might just be able to hear the pitter-patter of rain that's just eased up a little on the windscreen of the Porsche Macan in which I'm sitting, ready to hit the road on my way to Llandudno, to the Motorsport Lounge, to meet up with Gareth and Richard for the 20th anniversary On Speed live show. I've already been grateful for the remote boot opening and keyless entry on the car while I was ferrying a keyboard, cables, other stuff I need for the event, ferrying that into the car in torrential rain, juggling an umbrella, bits that I don't want to get wet, and doors. And the remote opening made it so much easier. I managed to get everything loaded without anything getting wet. So we're ready to go. I've just turned off the M4 onto the M25. I'm in the motorways between London and Wales part of my journey. And my trip planner tells me that I should be getting there just before 2:30. And I'll need to make a quick charging stop. I've got 81% battery left at the moment, which won't be quite enough to get me there. It says I've got 229 miles range left and it's 246 miles to go, so I'll probably go for a late pit stop. Now, I quite like the way the car coasts, as in when I lift my foot from the accelerator, there's no instant regenerative braking kicking in to slow you down a little. The car maintains its speed, no regenerative braking. And actually, that works very well for me in London traffic. I can just sort of roll along nice and comfortably, nice and smoothly. You can, I believe, turn the option on so that you can, you know, use that one foot style of driving that some people like, but I prefer something that's a bit more familiar to me, to the way that driving an internal combustion engine vehicle is. Apparently it's time to take a break. The dashboard has just alerted me that signs of tiredness detected. I don't know how it's doing that, whether it's something to do with whether there's a camera tracking eye movement, or whether it's to do with how you're gripping and moving the steering wheel. I think that's sometimes used to detect state of alertness, tiredness. And as it happened, I was planning to take a break about now anyway, so that's good timing, car. Thanks a lot. Thank you for reminding me. Off the motorway and on A Road now. I'm on the A41 heading towards Chester. And yeah, on A Road the dynamics of the car are a bit more apparent, and it feels great, confidence inspiring. Much better feel in terms of in terms of roll and how much it's moving about, than you'd expect for, you know, this kind of SUV body, which is relatively high. But the centre of gravity is low because of where all the big bits are in the platform this is based on, which I think is the premium performance platform, something like that, which is a new 800 volt architecture platform that Porsche are now using. Yeah, so dynamically it really does not feel like something this tall. And while I'm certainly not going to be testing any limits on a damp Saturday afternoon on Welsh public roads, it feels eager, direct, reassuring, like I say. Just for the record, it's 137 miles an hour top speed, 5.7 seconds, 0 to 60. This is the base model Macan with motors on the rear axle only. There is an option with drive for the front wheels, which is quicker. This does have the rear wheel steering, however, which is nice. I'm just driving through Sandford. Now, isn't that the town in Hot Fuzz where Simon Pegg, the overzealous policeman, is banished to because he's showing up all his London colleagues? Is it Sandford? Can't remember. Oh, that's a little audio warning telling me I might have exceeded the speed limit. Let's just back it off there. I think it's Sandford. Interesting to reflect that this is an all-electric Porsche. Of course, the Taycan was the first all-electric Porsche of the modern era. But this is kind of bringing things around full circle, because the first vehicle that Ferdinand Porsche built was electric. And that's how they started out, and that's where they've come around to now. Right, time for a pit stop. I'm here at Billie Jean's Cafe, where I've stopped in for a quick top-up charge, which was very easy to get going. I just pulled up, plugged the charger in, got out my little card to validate the charging session, and that just went through first touch, all good, and it's now charging at 167 kilowatts. Which is good. That means I won't have to hang around here too long before I get on my way again. Well, that's interesting. The charging rate has just gone up to about 207 kilowatts. I think, actually, that's because there was another vehicle using the adjacent charging station. Now that they've left, maybe there's more juice available all around, so we've got a bit more juice coming our way. In fact, we've already reached our target charge, which will easily get us to Llandudno and then on from there, so I'm going to unplug and get on my way. We're now up to 51% battery charge. That was pretty quick.
It's not Gareth Jones, it's Zug on speed!
I'm on my way back from North Wales to London now. Had a very pretty drive through some of the country round Conwy, and now we're in the slightly less pretty but still very passable Midlands. Now, one subject that came up last night in the show was what has changed over 20 years of the car industry, and on reflection, one very significant thing is that cars generally have just become a lot more capable. You know, whichever bit of the market you look at, they've just got much more capable, better, and the envelope of what they do is so much bigger. You know, a relatively modest family car that you might buy these days has performance that would significantly exceed what you'd have had 20 years ago. An off-roader can be way more comfortable. And this Macan, embodies a lot of that, in that it's very practical vehicle, absolutely a good family car that has sports car performance, and all wrapped up in a big dollop of luxury packaging. Yeah, it just does a lot more than the same thing, even if Porsche had made it back then, could possibly have done. I completed my second charging stop, which was, again, absolutely seamless. Someone was asking about range anxiety, and I really don't have
range anxiety with electric cars to any significant degree. But I do often have, I guess, first recharge anxiety if I'm new to an electric vehicle, until I've actually pulled into a charging station and got it charging. I'm just a little, you know, anxious that whatever the system that this car is using, you know, might just not be something that works this time for me at that station. I'm a little too anxious about that, because it's really hardly ever been an issue. But both of my recharges with the Macan have been ridiculously simple. I just plugged the charger cable in, touched my charging card to the charger, and away we went. So, nice one. I just had a voice alert from the Macan. It suddenly announced that there was traffic queuing ahead, and sure enough, within about 20 seconds, I was coming into a queue of traffic on the M40. So the takeaway is that the couple of alerts that I've had from the vehicle during this trip have been useful and absolutely spot on and very well timed. So definitely helping me out rather than annoying me. Well done. Well done, Macan. The steering for me has, you know, excellent weight and precision. You don't get that enough, I think, these days. It's incredibly easy to get to know and get familiar with. You know, no surprises in terms of how things worked, or in terms of figuring out how aspects of the car's various systems work, or how you change this, change that. There are dedicated switches which have a nice feel, and yeah, it's easy, not a hard car to get on with, certainly not a hard car to love. Also, easy to go fast and easy to go slow and smooth. If I was to compare this to the Porsche that I know best, which is my 944 Turbo, well, this just does everything better. You know, there is there's really nothing that the 944 Turbo does better than this, which is as it should be, given the nearly four decades between their manufacture. Actually, the two things that I do have to give to the 944 Turbo are, subjectively, well, I do prefer the looks, but you can't make a contemporary SUV look like a sleek 80s sports car, so that's a bit of a tall order. And objectively, this is a little bit slower top speed, but I don't think that's much to complain about. So I'm making my last recharging stop before returning the car, and I've pulled into an Ionity charging station, as that's one of the recommended charging networks that Porsche mention, partly because they offer very high speed charging up to 350 kilowatts, and having just plugged in a couple of minutes ago, I'm seeing 265, 266, 265 kilowatts going in, which is excellent. That's a very high charging rate, and so I'll just need about 5 minutes to get me up to 35% from about 16, I think, when I pulled in.
It's not Gareth Jones, it's Zug on speed!
I was making a few notes about the Macan, and the words that I seemed to be writing down most often were excellent, easy, and smooth. excellent. I mean, so many aspects of this, but yeah, principally the dynamics. The steering's great. It's got a good weight and precision to it, which one doesn't get often enough. The braking is, you know, completely seamless, smooth between the regenerative and kinetic mechanical braking, and has a very reassuring, solid, reliable feel to it. And it's just, you know, it's easy to drive fast, it's easy to drive slow and smooth, and easy to get to know. I really haven't had any surprises in getting into any of the systems, bits, controls. Things are where you expect to find them, or are easy to work out. The dedicated switches to control all the important stuff have a good feel to them, and I've spent very little time messing about with any menus. Thank you, Satnav. And yeah, and the infotainment system, excellent. You know, these things aren't always easy to get to know and navigate, but this has been a breeze. And I had one or two little alerts and warnings that were unexpected but very welcome. A warning of traffic ahead on one occasion, that I might be tired on another occasion, which, you know, was not naggy. It was just, you know, useful information given at an appropriate time.
Take the first exit.
Okay, I will.
On speed!
Yes, this is Zog on speed. Although, Zog, I'm guessing that McCann that you drove kept a lid on your potential for speeding, what is a very fast car. You know, you said that you were getting just the right amount of warnings without feeling nannied in the car.
As I think I also said, you see, I was having a nice, leisurely, reasonably brisk, but leisurely drive up to North Wales on public roads. No, I was being very sensible. I wasn't pushing any limits of any kind. And it was a tremendous vehicle for the trip. By the way, on the pronunciation, I'm not quite clear whether it's McCann or McCann, because I've been saying McCann, but I keep hearing McCann, you know, coming out of the mouths of people who I feel like should know what they're doing. So I don't know, I just throw that in there.
I reckon that's a north south divide thing. McCann, if you're brought up in the south. If you got any Yorkshire in you, or Lancashire, it'd be a McCann, a driving McCann.
Maybe I don't know, but
who knows.
No, but it was a tremendous car for the trip, as I say.
My one takeaway from it was the overwhelming feeling I got from you, from the whole tone of your voice and driving the car, that this was a relaxing Porsche, and that wasn't something I was expecting necessarily.
I think that's fair. I had all of the creature comforts I wanted, you know, in terms of entertainment system and hot air, cold air, and information as required. And it was a comfortable ride. It was pretty relaxing. It was a lovely trip, no question.
And of course, a Porsche EV is always going to be cooler than, I don't know, at least a Tesla EV on the road, or almost any
car. Well, but even apart from any cool value or otherwise, it was also a very practical option. You know, the fast charging worked well and was very useful, although, of course, that's also a Tesla bonus there with the hypercharger network. So, two thumbs up. Yeah, no question.
You know you are a car nut when?
I have developed a bit of a watch thing over the last few years. And as somebody pointed out, it's not uncommon for car people to get interested in. There seems to be a fair Venn diagram crossover between, you know, interest in cars and interest in watches. Maybe something to do with unnecessary mechanical complexity. I don't know. But yeah, you know you're a car nut when you base your decision whether to give way to somebody partly on what they're driving. That's, you know what, I hate to say it, but I have done that. You know, it's like, you know, you're driving that. No, sorry, I'm not sure I've got time for you today. But oh yeah, good choice. You know, and it's not necessarily the fancy thing. You know, if it's a Deschevaux, I'll always give way to a Deschevaux.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. So what cars will you not give away for?
BMW X5s.
Oh, of course.
That's probably top of the list.
You know you're a car nut when
you give way to a Citroën Dishavo over an X5.
Shock on speed. Hey, your program, Zog, your edition of Zog on Speed. Anything else you want to talk about that's in your head?
Well, Tez is in the news again, and it's nice to see that this is actually something to do with something other than whatever terrible, stupid, offensive thing Elon Musk has just done. The company has announced that its future direction is likely to take it away from the automotive market, and that they see their future as much more in humanoid robots and robo-taxis, AI and autonomous technology. I mean, it seems to me it's a slightly sort of mixed story in that, we should also say, along with this, and of course this has quite rightly made it into the headlines, Elon Musk, as part of this future strategy rollout, has negotiated a potentially $1 trillion payday. You know,
for himself, not for his workers,
for himself. Yeah, of course. Dependent on the company achieving, you know, certain performance marks, you know, including valuation of the company, selling certain number of cars, certain number of robots and robo-taxis. This is a very interesting thing because, you know, on the one hand, it's a pivot away from exactly what Tesla does. You know, Tesla makes electric cars, and this is them saying, well, okay, maybe we're not going to do so much of that anymore. We're going in a new direction. This is a pretty big deal. But on the other hand, the way they're planning to go into making humanoid robots and robo-taxis, you know, there's certainly a continuity there. And the robo-taxis, as I understand it, the plan is for these robo-taxis to be developments of the Model Y in their current lineup, and then new dedicated vehicles. But in both cases, they will be using the self-driving technology that Tesla is already, of course, spending a lot on developing.
Some of this is driven by the rise of the Chinese EV as a world force, isn't it? You know, it's going to be a commercial decision, and they're making short-term, medium-term and long-term plans in a business. And the way that we've seen AI capture people's imagination in the last 2 or 3 years since the advent of stable diffusion and all that gave us, and, you know, bespoke learning models, that AI has the ability, as we know, we'll be using it on this program, we're almost certainly using it this very second in some form or another, you know, it's ubiquitous. And Tesla do have a march on this. They've been working on robotics and on autonomous cars for a long time, so it's a lot less of a pivot, you might say, than Yamaha going from musical instruments to vehicles, which is what happened, or Holden going from horse and carriages to building interiors of cars. I think that's how it came about. You know, there are many great manufacturers who were involved in other projects, mostly Chinese companies weren't car companies before they became car companies. So, yeah, industry does pivot, and you can see why. It's the first time I've used the word pivot, by the way. It's a good one, isn't it? Change direction.
The point about the competition, particularly from China, is, this is key. I'm sure that's the main reason why they're keen to not to entirely rely on selling electric cars in the future. They probably see that the era in which they could be rolling out truly impressive products and selling them rather profitably is coming to an end. You know, it's going to be much tougher. So on the face of it, it doesn't seem like a terrible idea. You know, on the face of it, it also seems like a offensive to promise somebody a $1 trillion payout. Although if that person has made your company worth $8.5 trillion, which I think is the benchmark they've set, you know, maybe you can justify that in purely economic terms. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Incredible figures.
But I don't think that giving any one person, and certainly not Elon Musk, $1 trillion is good for anybody.
Yeah, true, true. Very true. I've been saying that since Who Wants to Be a Millionaire came on TV. Back in the day, winning a million, whenever that first appeared, some 25 years ago maybe, that was an astronomical amount of money. And I thought, that's probably going to be more damaging than life-affirming. And then Euro Millions got to win a planet in Euro Millions. And I only should win enough money to buy a planet. You know what I mean? The kind of level of billionaire that they're making, or multi-millionaire, that's kind of crazy. It's kind of dangerous. Now, listen, Elon Musk, I'm really struggling here. I will not and cannot find myself supporting any of Musk's political actions in recent years. You know, he's may have different experiences to me, and that philosophy doesn't work for me. And yet, he's been so right on EVs and reusable spacecraft and so many other ideas that I want to give him the benefit of the doubt. And this was kind of re-inspired by peer pressure as well, Zog. Yeah, at the 20 years on speed thing, I asked Richard about what it's like owning a Tesla these days, and he said, well, it's actually a great car made by a company who've got an absolute twat as a leader. Well, paraphrasing there. And I thought, well, that's interesting. You know, Richard hasn't cancelled Tesla because of Elon Musk's actions, because he's a car man and he likes cars. And then last week I saw that Johnny Smith had bought a 250,000-mile Tesla Model S for an absolute bargain price. Can't remember what it was, a few thousand pounds. £5,000, was it that?
I've also seen that video. And that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Off the top of my head, sounds about right.
And the joy of this car is, because it's a Model S, it comes with free Tesla supercharging in perpetuity until its death. And oh my gosh, that sounds like a really smart idea if you want a cheap to run second-hand electric car. And
absolutely.
It got to that point again. You know, I talk about the crossover, right? There's a crossover point where Tesla kind of fell off. No one in their right mind would buy a Tesla anymore. But yeah, a few of us in our daft minds really considering that that would be an amazingly good idea. And I'm trying to separate Elon from Tesla. I've separated him from SpaceX. I just like watching rockets land. It's amazing.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because, like you, I'm pretty much unreserved in my admiration for what he's done with SpaceX.
Yeah.
And they have done tremendous things in advancing launcher technology and in being part of a new, well, space race, let's call it.
It is.
You know, a new wave of push to get more people and more satellites and stuff into space and to explore and push further into the solar system. I'm okay with separating him and what I think are the terrible things he does with Twitter/X and his political activities. I can separate that from SpaceX, just like you should separate, you know, the art from the artists. You know, it's not uncommon for it to turn out that somebody who's written a bunch of amazing songs that you love or made some movies that you love, you know, turns out to be, you know, a terrible person, maybe even guilty of some quite serious, quite nasty criminal offences.
Yep.
Does that mean you can't enjoy the art anymore? You shouldn't necessarily cancel the art because you don't like the artist anymore. There are, you know, kind of degrees of this. You know, I guess the more sort of personal the art is and the more it is to do with their personal experience, the more it draws on their personal experiences, then the more likely you are to turn away from it.
I think you've just described Elon Musk as an artist here, Zog. That's a first.
Well, I was drawing an analogy, because it's different with, you know, Elon Musk and his car company. Because if you buy a new Tesla, you know, you're giving money to Elon Musk and you're supporting his ongoing endeavours. And, you know, you might quite reasonably choose to say, no, actually, I'm going to deny myself the pleasure of having what might actually be the best option for me. I'm going to deny myself that pleasure and that privilege because actually it means enough to me to make a point about the boss's political views.
Hey, we all boycotted South African peaches in the 80s.
Sure, exactly. But buying a second-hand Tesla, you know, none of that money's going to Musk. And in Johnny Thiss' case, Elon Musk is paying for his power.
I love that.
You know,
way.
Every time he fills up.
That's lovely.
So I'm saying I don't think we necessarily cancel Tesla, but I'm not sure that I'd buy one at the moment, although I would admit that they can be very, very fine vehicles.
On that optimistic note on EVs at work and fine cars, do you remember when you came to North Wales in your McCann? You told me that you stopped somewhere and you couldn't remember exactly where you stopped.
Yeah, I did tell you that.
You told me afterwards it was Billie Jean's Cafe. You put it in the piece that you recorded.
Right.
I didn't know until then.
Okay, yes.
I didn't know of Billie Jean's Cafe, which is a convenient, rapid recharging. I had no idea. Billie Jean's Cafe is in the same block of buildings as Haven Garage. Now, this is significant to me for two reasons. My big brother, John Brin, his best mates, Neil and, was it Jeff, the other guy? Their dad ran Haven Garage. And they used to turn up at my house in all sorts of cars, interesting cars that they borrowed from the lot at the back. Great characters in my life. I had no idea. But, so you were actually that close to one of the chief sections. I mentioned this on 20 Years on Speed. One of the chief sections of the amazing North Wales Expressway, the A55, that I designed and engineered. That, it was pretty much that Holkin bypass. The town you were in recharging is called Pentre Holkin, which means Holkin Village. Right there, you can admire my most tangible ever bit of work whilst recharging your McCann in seconds. That makes me happy. I hope it made you happy.
Excellent. No, that's good to know. That's good to know. Fantastic.
So thank you for Zog on Speed.
Thank you. Well, we've used our time up again. I think a couple of things we might have talked about, but we're out of time, so there we go.
Yeah, I'll be here editing for the rest of the week if I don't stop us now. But man, thank you very much indeed. That's it. We'll be back in a fortnight. Here is a piece of music from Zog. This is Zog on Speed. This is Zog's eulogy, I don't know, tribute to one of the greatest engineering design houses in the world. This is Zuffenhausen by Kraftwerst, which is really Zog. See ya.
See ya. We'll be right back.
this show, then please like, share and subscribe. For information on how to contact the show, see pictures, read song lyrics, follow us on social media, or to sponsor this podcast, go to garethjones.tv. Gareth Jones on Speed is made in Wales by Whiz Bang.
Sound on!